You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
A win is a win. Doesn't matter how pretty or how ugly it is. And over the course of an 82-game season, you need as many wins as you can get your hands on. What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Now, if you had told me before the start of the season that James Harden and Russell Westbrook would attempt some type of Freaky Friday maneuver where suddenly James Harden became the inefficient shot chucker and Russell Westbrook became the Houston Rockets hero, mounting late game comebacks and facilitating the ball and shooting with a beautiful amount of efficiency, I would have said you were crazy. But that's exactly what's happening right now. Is James Harden is in a bit of a shooting slump, and Russell Westbrook is apparently the new Houston Rockets hero. It seems like some Rockets fans are ready to build the statue right now outside of Toyota Center. And for years, Rockets fans could not quite understand Thunder fans and their love of this guy who on the outside looking in just looked like this brash, chaotic, shot-chucking guy. And after just a couple games wearing a Rockets jersey, I'm really starting to see where it comes from. I mean, you know, heart was never a question with Russell Westbrook. He's a guy that leaves it on the court every night. But seeing him play for your team, it's something else. You know, just the energy and the passion that he plays with and what he's willing to do on the court to try and secure a win, it really is incredible. I mean, so he finished the night with his first triple-double in a Rockets jersey, 13 assists, 10 boards, 28 points, on pretty good shooting, honestly, 9 of 17, so smidge over 50%, only attempted 3 three-pointers, only hit one of them, but there were a bunch of different opportunities where he passed up an open look for a 3 or a semi-open look for a 3, or passed up a mid-range jumper, trying to facilitate the ball, trying to get somebody else a better shot, a more efficient shot, whether it was Clint Capella down low near the bucket or an open three-pointer somewhere out on the wing. Russell Westbrook was looking to get everybody involved, and he very easily could have cracked 20 assists on the evening. I need to go pull up the stat to see potential assists for Westbrook so far across his two games, but it feels like there's a ton of different opportunities where he's creating looks for teammates and they're just not being converted. And not every shot is going to fall, but the fact that Russell Westbrook is able to get the ball to his teammates in positions where they are wide open or relatively wide open and giving them the opportunity to score is huge. The fact that we've had two games so far where Westbrook has seemed to fit in almost, I don't want to say flawlessly, because he is still, you know, averaging some turnovers. He had 4 turnovers in this game, had some turnovers in the Bucks game. So he's still going to be a little sloppy with the ball. That's just something that you come to expect with high usage type players like Westbrook, like Harden, like LeBron. Guys like that will turn the ball over. And it's the nature when you've got a player whose usage rating starts soaring into the 30s or near the 40 mark, because the ball is in their hands so often, you're going to make mistakes with it. And that's something you live with. If Westbrook's going to get 13, 14 assists, and he's going to have three, four, maybe five turnovers, you live with that. You just hope that they're not live ball turnovers that then lead to the Rockets' poor transition defense, which was apparent the other night. So that's Russell Westbrook, and his triple-double did notch him the second all-time spot on the triple-double list. He did pass up Magic Johnson, so that was his 139th career triple-double. So he does now pass up Magic Johnson and is in sole possession of the second spot on the all-time triple-double list. He's got a ways to go to catch Oscar Robertson, but he probably could do it this season. If he's going to keep averaging stat lines that look like these first two games, which I think is wholly apparent he's capable of doing for the entire season, if he's going to do that, he could very easily catch Oscar Robertson this season. I want to say Big O is at 179, somewhere around there. He's about 40 away, something like that. So we'll be on the triple-double watch for Russell Westbrook as the season progresses. But James Harden. Oh boy. So James has not had a great start to his season, and I think it can all be summed up by something that all of us saw right before halftime in the game against the Pelicans, where James, frustrated, not playing well through the first six quarters of the season, and as he's trying to get the final shot up before halftime against the Pelicans, he can't even get the shot off. Pelicans defenders swarm him, so he takes the basketball and just slams it against the court, and then unfortunately for James, it comes bouncing straight back at his face and smacks him upside the head. And so he just walks off the court in frustration. But the best part of it all was Josh Hart's reaction to the whole thing. Josh Hart just kind of looks at him and is like so confused in the moment as to what exactly is going on. And, you know, all the captions and all the memes on Twitter about it were great. And even James had a sense of humor, you know, when asked after the game about it. He goes, you know, oh no, did it hurt? You know, somebody asked him, Sam Amick, I think, asked him, did it hurt? And James goes, no. You know, I have my beard, so it's all good. Maybe it wasn't Sam, but somebody asked him. And so, you know, even James had a sense of humor about it. But I think that moment really embodies James's first two games this season. He has not shot the ball well. He's shooting like 22-23% from the floor, just barely under 12% from behind the arc. He has had a rough go of it these first two games. Now, if you take apart the game against the Pelicans, he was 2 of 18 from behind the arc. But since he was 8 of 29 overall, that means he was 6 of 11. He was 6 of 11 inside the arc. So he's getting to the bucket, and he's, you know, getting his free throws. He had 12 free throw attempts, hit 11 of them. So he's still getting to the line. And I would just love to see James not fall so in love with that three-point shot, especially when there's other guys on the roster who could be taking some of those shots from him, especially when he just doesn't have it going. Now, if James is rolling along and he's, you know, sitting at 5, 6, 7 three-pointers made on the evening, sure. And there is something to be said for shooting yourself out of a slump. But I think when you get to the double-digit mark, you know, to 11, 12, 13 attempts, and you've still only hit one or two, I think at that point, especially in a close game, James needs to realize that he has other guys on the roster that are more than capable of hitting some of those shots. Daniel House was 4 of 5. PJ Tucker was 2 of 3. Austin Rivers was 2 of 4. Westbrook isn't going to be your shooter, so he's not included in there. And Eric Gordon, his struggles seemed to continue. He was just 2 of 9 from behind the arc. So you have other guys who can hit those shots, and I'd like to see him maybe distribute it a little bit more rather than worry about getting his shot rolling, especially in a close game where, again, every win counts at the end of the season. We saw it last season. The Rockets fell from being potentially the 2 seed down to the 4 seed off of a last-minute shot by Paul George. And to not be in a position like that again, where you're relying on one game at the end of the season, or even potentially relying on other teams to beat certain other teams as far as the standings are concerned. I remember it was some toss-up between Portland and Denver, and then like a Sacramento game at the end of last season, where depending on who won, the Rockets may slide into the second spot, third spot, or fourth spot as far as playoff seeding was concerned. You don't want your fate to be in the hands of another team, or you don't want your fate to be in the hands of a last second shot by a guy like Paul George, who's a pretty darn good three-point shooter. You want to be in control of your own fate. And to do that, you have to put away the bad teams early in the season. And I don't want to call the Pelicans necessarily a bad team, but they're a team that the Rockets should be beating. When you're missing Zion, when you're missing Jrue Holiday, the Rockets had no business letting this game be as close as it was. And a lot of that came from the defensive woes. They have not looked good through two games on the defensive end. They've looked good in stretches. The Rockets looked better in the fourth quarter against the Pelicans. They really kind of shut them down a little bit after letting them really get whatever they wanted in the second and third quarters. And same thing against the Bucks. They looked great in the first half against the Bucks, and then something happened in the second half where the scheme just wasn't working, the energy level kind of fell off, and then on top of that, coupled with the offensive woes that they faced against the Bucks and for stretches against the Pelicans, when your defense is not, you know, in its peak form and you're struggling offensively for stretches of the game, it's going to be bad. If you can't put points on the board and you can't prevent the opponent from putting points on the board, you are going to have a bad time as far as a basketball game is concerned. And we'll get more into the defense in the next segment. But really quickly, a quick word from our friends at Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when you enter code LOCKEDON at checkout. Again, that is code LOCKEDON at checkout for your total purchase of $399 or more and $30 off. Alrighty, and we are back. Now, before I get into the defensive woes of the Houston Rockets and the fact that Josh Hart scored 23 points, Brandon Ingram 35, Lonzo Ball 18, before I get into all that, I want to get a little weird for a minute. And by getting a little weird, I'm talking conspiracies. So to do that, I have to don my tinfoil hat before we can move any further. So with that being said, hang on. Almost there. Okay. Tinfoil hat is on. The reason for that is now the government can't listen in, aliens can't listen in, and most importantly, NBA referees can't listen in. We are going to have a dialogue about these phantom offensive fouls that James Harden has faced through the first two games of the season. Is the NBA targeting James Harden? This point of emphasis by the referees seems rather blatant, and throughout the other games that I've been watching, it doesn't seem like other players are getting the same treatment as far as this very minor, you know, we call it the chicken wing, right? When you're driving, when you're setting up a step back like James does, you know, that off arm tends to come out and tends to, you know, maybe push away the defender just a little bit. And this is something that we've seen for years, something that hasn't been called an offensive foul for years. And even in the referee handbook, it doesn't appear to be an offensive foul. So why suddenly are they targeting James Harden with it? I mean, let's face it, James Harden has completely changed the game of basketball in the sense that every year he comes back with a new tool, every year he comes back with a way to rework or reinvent the game. Obviously, he hasn't made much use of the one-legged three-point shot that he was advertising all summer as his new secret weapon. But his step back is nigh unguardable. His handles are ridiculous. He can get to the basket at will. James Harden is the most talented offensive player in the league. An argument could be made for Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant's not in the league right now. Kevin Durant's out. So we're going to go with James Harden. James Harden is the most talented offensive player in the league. And does that bode, I mean, I think it bodes well for the NBA, but maybe his style, you know, the stylistic aspect of going for as many free throws as he does, you know, maybe the NBA wants to put a stop to it. And we've seen it before where refs have suddenly swallowed their whistle in the playoffs when it comes to James Harden. And now we're seeing this increased point of emphasis that is very, very much so negatively impacting James Harden at the start of the season. I think he's up to 4 offensive foul calls now, maybe 5. It's definitely 4 at least. 3 from the Bucks game, and I know that there was at least 1 in the Pelicans game. There might have been 2. But James Harden is going to struggle with this. And if the referees keep calling it the way that they're calling it, then he's going to have to learn how to keep that off arm tucked and not even if he's not making contact with the defender, if his off arm swings out in any way, shape, or form, which is exactly what happened in the Pels game. In the Pels game, I forget if it was Josh Hart guarding him, but he, you know, set up his step back, you know, had a nice cross behind the back dribble or something, and or I guess as he was driving to the with his right hand, his left arm kind of swung behind the defender, and that led to an offensive foul call. And it didn't look like an offensive foul call. It really didn't. And that's why it's so perplexing, and that's why we're calling them phantom offensive foul calls for now, and that's why I'm wearing my tinfoil hat for these conspiracy theories, because maybe the refs are targeting James Harden. I was just watching the Hornets-Lakers game last night, and LeBron James, as per usual, gets to just barrel his way to the bucket and stick his elbows out and shove them in people's chest and not get called for offensive fouls. So if that's not an offensive foul, then why is James Harden's off-arm brushing a defender as he's beating them off the dribble count as an offensive foul? Or why does James Harden's legs swinging out from under him a bit count as an offensive foul? I really do hope, and hang on, I'll have to take the, 1 second. Okay, tinfoil hat gone. I really do hope that the NBA referees kind of even themselves out as the season progresses. We've seen these points of emphasis before. The freedom of movement one from last season is still very much in effect right now. And in addition to that, they've got the new point of emphasis on traveling or on shuffling, on a player shuffling their feet before they start their dribble. And we've seen that quite a bit. But this offensive foul point of emphasis, as far as the off arm goes and creating contact with the defensive player, I don't think that any of the offensive fouls James has been whistled for to start the season should have counted. And it remains to be seen how the refs are going to treat this as the season progresses. We've seen in the past that they sometimes come out really strong with these points of emphasis, and then they kind of dial it back a little bit. And we've also seen where they come out strong with it, they dial it back, and then the players also tend to adjust to these points of emphasis. But for James, it's just got to be as simple as you've got to keep that off arm tucked. Because if you make it look like an offensive foul, a referee is going to blow the whistle. And it's as simple as that. Sorry for getting a little weird on you guys there, but I had to wear the tinfoil hat. I'll probably provide an artist's rendition, artist representation of what that looks like a little bit later on. But now we can get into the Rockets' defense. I had to get off my soapbox there a little bit. But the Rockets gave up 123 points to the Zion-less and Drew-less New Orleans Pelicans. Again, Josh Hart had 23 points. Brandon Ingram had a whopping 35 points on 14 to 22 from the floor. Lonzo had 18 and 10, 18 points, 10 assists on pretty good shooting efficiency as well. He was 4 of 9 from behind the arc. Reddick came in hot, 4 of 11 from behind the arc. I mean, at some point you have to look at it and really think, okay, is this team just having a hot shooting night? or are the Rockets doing everything that it can do to actually defend? Because sometimes you just have to tip your cap. Sometimes the offensive player is just better. You know, if there's a hand in everybody's face, if shots are being contested and they're still going in, then sometimes you just tip your cap and you say, okay, the other team had a better night than we did, and it showed. But this was not one of those occurrences. There were so many breakdowns in communication on defense, where, especially in transition, and not just transition where Rockets miss a shot and the Pelicans get out on the fast break. I'm talking even after a made Rockets basket, there were a handful of times where a Pels player would leak out and get down to the other side of the court, and just off of a long pass, off of a long inbounds, or, you know, a quick inbounds pass, and then a, you know, somebody pushes the ball up the court really quickly, and they're getting wide open looks. And then you've got Rockets players, you know, James Harden, Eric Gordon, standing around, you know, shrugging, waving their arms at each other, saying, well, you know, that's your man. What's going on? And this is an area where, even though James Harden has improved defensively, there were at least a couple spots in the game, and I'm remembering one specifically, and I can't remember exactly what quarter it happened in or at what point, but I want to say it was Josh Hart out on the wing. James and somebody else were near the bucket with another Pels player getting ready to box out, but as soon as Josh Hart caught the ball, James just kind of, you know, saw him there at the three and just turned and just got ready for the rebound. And it's this kind of, you know, it's that gamble where it's, okay, he's already on the three-point line. I'm not going to bother rushing out to try and contest the shot. And it's those moments as the leader of a team that really can't happen. Because for James, there can't be the excuse anymore of, oh, he shoulders so much of an offensive burden that he has to take rest, that he has to rest on defense. That can't be an argument for James anymore. He's got Russell Westbrook to share the load. He had Chris Paul for the past couple of years. He's got plenty of offensive weapons in this lineup. He really has to hang his hat defensively. Now, is James ever going to be a defensive stopper? No. But he does have to lead by example on the defensive end. And I think that's something that, at least with Chris Paul, you know, a guy who throughout his career was an all-NBA first or second team defender for the most part of it, you know, not so much near the end with the Rockets. He's still a very intelligent defensive player, but just, you know, due to father time, things of that nature, you know, wasn't quite as lethal on that side of the court as he used to be, not quite a lockdown defender anymore, but still a very, very good defender in his own right. He was able to lead by example and to really kind of, if you've got Chris Paul in your ear saying, hey, we need to pick up the slack defensively, you're like, okay, we can do that. Because every play you see Chris Paul really digging into his defender, getting up and getting inside his, getting inside the offensive player's jersey, playing that really hard-nosed style of defense that Chris Paul is known for. Whereas if you have James Harden, again, not a bad defender. I'm not slamming James Harden's defense. I'm not trying to sit here and, you know, point towards the defensive blooper reels from years ago that people still think are true today. Not at all. But we would be kidding ourselves if we didn't at least point out the fact that James does take plays off defensively, and sometimes he does ball watch, and people will make backdoor cuts against him, or sometimes he just won't give 100% effort on that side of the court. And now that you've got, he was still the face of the franchise while Chris Paul was here. That's no question. Chris Paul was the, you know, the Robin to his Batman, just like Westbrook is now the Robin to James Harden's Batman. But Westbrook does not embody the same defensive principles that Chris Paul does, and so James has to lead by example on that side of the court. And James can't then bark at other players like Eric Gordon or Daniel House or whoever it may be, or even Westbrook. He can't go to them and say, hey, why aren't you doing this? Because then they can just fire back, well, you're not doing it. And as the leader of the team, he has to be the first guy to do it. When it comes to contesting shots, when it comes to giving 100% effort on that side of the court, he has to be the guy to do it. But I think a lot of the mistakes on defense the other night can be boiled down to miscommunication. but some of it does come from intensity and effort. And the Rockets historically have been a team that sometimes play down to the level of their opponent, and then they also play up to the level of their opponent. So we saw it in the Bucks game. The Rockets came out swinging. I mean, a dominant first half performance. But also historically, the Rockets have been a team that sometimes take the foot off the gas. They fall in love with a three-point shot, and then when it suddenly starts not falling, they flounder a little bit. And so we saw that too. But it's important as a top-tier NBA team to come out and take care of business regardless of who you're playing. Doesn't matter if it's the Pelicans without Zion and Drew. Doesn't matter if it's the Bucks. Doesn't matter if it's going to be the OKC Thunder featuring Chris Paul, which is coming later tonight, Monday evening here in Houston. Doesn't matter who you're playing. You have to come out with intensity and effort, and you have to come out craving a win. You have to come out with the desire to win the game. And at points in that Pelicans game, it just felt like there wasn't intensity on the basketball court. Now, Russell Westbrook had his phenomenal end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter run. Rockets went on a 13-0 run where I think the score originally was 100-92. They were down 8. And all spearheaded by Russell Westbrook and his just intensity, which was sorely needed at that point in the game. Russell Westbrook comes in and spearheads that 13-0 run. They take the lead 105-100, and they never looked back. Held on to the lead for the rest of the game, held on to the win. And even though the execution down the stretch was a little shoddy, James Harden had that turnover right at the very end that led to a Pelicans 3. I mean, or was it a 2? Either way, James Harden had the turnover right at the end of the game, you know, trying to force a foul by dragging the ball between two defenders instead of just trying to run the shot clock out. And, you know, that was a poor decision, poor execution. And luckily, the Rockets have another 80 games to work out these kinks, to work out, you know, any of these issues, and to hone themselves into a better team as the season progresses. We saw it last season. The Rockets were a pretty poor defensive team for the first stretch of the season before the All-Star break. And then after All-Star break, I can't remember exactly where they ranked defensively. I don't want to say it was first, but they were a top-tier defensive team for the final 25 games of the season last year. And while that's not great because you don't want to just let it, you don't want to let the bleeding happen for the first half of the season and then say, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll turn on the switch in the second half. That's not ideal, you know, because again, then you'll drop some games that you should have won. But I think there's a lot of hope, and if the Rockets can just come out with more intensity and actually hang their hat defensively, again, they're not going to be a top five defensive team. They don't have the tools to do that. I think that was readily apparent in some of the mismatches that they faced. Again, Brandon Ingram going for 35 points. I think right now, the Rockets' kryptonite is really any player with length that they don't have a great defender to throw on. And Brandon Ingram, you know, standing at a very lanky and athletic, you know, what, 6'8", 6'9", maybe 6'10", he was just shooting over PJ Tucker most of the night, or whoever was guarding him. And as much as I am a huge fan of PJ Tucker, you can't expect PJ Tucker to stop everybody every night, right? There's an old adage, and it's you can't teach height. And I love PJ, but at 6'5", and for the, you know, lack of athleticism that he has, and I say lack of athleticism, if I were to, you know, go play a one-on-one game with PJ Tucker, he would look like Giannis next to me. So, you know, who am I to critique PJ Tucker's athleticism? But compared to other NBA level talent, PJ Tucker is not that athletic. And so expecting him to be able to stop a guy like Brandon Ingram, who once he gets it rolling, you know, can simply just pull up and elevate over PJ Tucker, you know, it's just too much. The Rockets don't have a lengthy wing defender and haven't had a lengthy wing defender since Trevor Ariza left. So PJ Tucker is expected to fill that gap. And as far as a skilled defender goes, PJ is one of the best in the league. and he'll still get you some stops, and he'll still make it hard for the opposing player to score. But there's something to be said for an offensive player's ability to just, you know, be bigger or taller and then simply just elevate over Tucker. And right now the Rockets don't have a guy that they can slot in behind PJ or instead of PJ to make it harder for guys like Ingram to score the ball. And I take that back. They do have a guy that they could try, but it would require Mike D'Antoni to actually put some faith in his younger players. I would love, and I know there's a guy on Rockets Twitter who's going to love hearing this, I would love to see Gary Clark get a shot at going out there and guarding guys like Brandon Ingram. Because Gary Clark, you know, standing at about 6'9", 6'10", he was known for defense in college. He's a, you know, he's a smart defender, and he can very easily just sit in a corner and hit threes. Maybe not at quite the clip that PJ will, but Gary Clark, I think, could be, if he gets the minutes, Gary Clark could fill that gap and could be a lengthy defender that you can kind of spell PJ Tucker for, you know, 5-10 minutes a game. You know, as far as the Rockets' minutes distribution, again, it seems that D'Antoni's already falling, just two games into the season, D'Antoni's already falling in love with this six-man rotation. You know, PJ already, you know, had 38 minutes, James 36, Westbrook 33. I mean, Eric Gordon at 36 as well. It's just, for a team that's expecting to go late into the postseason again, I really wish Mike D'Antoni would extend his rotations just a little bit. You know, Austin Rivers at only 16 minutes. I know he's struggling with that. I want to say it was left elbow injury. It was one of his elbows was not feeling so hot. So, you know, there's a reason that maybe his minutes aren't as high as they could be. But when healthy, Austin Rivers could easily be getting 20-plus minutes a game and being, you know, and contributing. Tabo had 13 minutes. Didn't really do much in those 13 minutes. But Ben McLemore, another guy, you know, he missed both his three-pointers in the Pels game, but he's another guy that, you know, at least you can have another body out there on the court and, you know, kind of spell your starters a little bit, because James Harden's 30 now, Russell Westbrook 30, Eric Gordon 30. You know, these guys aren't, you know, young 20-year-olds anymore, and for the workload that is expected of really those three guys, you know, the main three guys on your offense, or the guys that are supposed to be the main three guys on your offense, the workload that's expected of them throughout the entire season as well into the postseason, it would be great to be able to cut their minutes here or there. You know, I'm not saying we need to, you know, put Harden and Westbrook and Gordon on a minutes restriction per se, but just think about the season as a marathon. And I think a lot of times Mike D'Antoni is just looking at the game right in front of him. And if that means that he's going to push his guys into the, you know, high 30s, you know, 40-minute territory, then he's just going to do it because he's worried about securing that win right there, right now, as opposed to looking down the line and thinking, okay, you know, I'll let James Harden sit for an extra minute or two, that kind of thing. Before we get out of here, we do have the Oklahoma City Thunder coming to Houston tonight. It's going to be a 7 p.m. tip-off Monday evening. Now, this might be a bit of an anticlimactic reunion between Chris Paul and James Harden and Russell Westbrook and the Thunder, because it is the second night of a back-to-back for the Thunder, who just beat the Warriors last night in Oklahoma City, and there's a potential that Chris Paul may not play this game. Now, Chris is a competitor, and especially going up against his former team, I mean, we saw it for a couple years here in Houston, you know, especially when he played the Clippers, he always plays with a chip on his shoulder, but it's like he plays with two chips on his shoulder when he's playing against his former team. So I expect Chris to play. I expect him to come out and want to have a big night and try to show up Harden and Westbrook and come in here and upset the Rockets and secure a win. But on top of that, you know, this Thunder team hasn't looked great. Chris Paul has not looked great. He did not have a great stat line in that Wizards game. But I'm not expecting this to be a hard game to win, but you can't sleep on Chris Paul. You know, he's still one of the greatest point guards to have ever played the game, and the issue with his old, you know, getting up there in age is that he's still capable of having an explosive superstar type of night. The only issue is that they become fewer and far between the older you get. So maybe tonight is the night where Chris Paul explodes and has, you know, a 30 or a 40 and 10 game kind of thing as a why did you trade me type of statement to the Rockets. But I'm not really expecting that. I think that it'll be a fun game for sure. It'll be interesting to see Chris Paul in an Oklahoma City jersey and Russell Westbrook in a Houston Rockets jersey going at it with each other, especially after the battles that we've had with them for the last couple of years. I wonder if he's going to get booed tonight. That I'm interested to see. I don't think he will, and I don't think he should. You know, Chris Paul is still, I mean, look, Chris Paul's in the intro to this podcast. Chris Paul is in the intro to the Locked On Rockets podcast. There's a call from Bill Worrell and Clyde Drexler in the intro to this podcast, and it's there for a reason. Chris Paul had a great stint of 2 years here in Houston. It really does suck that it wasn't able to culminate in a championship with James Harden, and that hamstring will always go down as one of the biggest what-ifs in Houston sports history. But including his on-the-court efforts here in Houston, Chris Paul was a big contributor to the community. He did a lot of community service. You know, he was traded here right after, or I guess right before, Hurricane Harvey hit. And immediately after Harvey hit, you know, he was in the community, he was helping out, he was providing resources. Chris Paul, you know, even though his reputation on the court is as a bit of an ass, honestly, you know, he really rubs people the wrong way sometimes, but off the court, for all intents and purposes, he is a phenomenal guy, friendly, you know, just a really, really, really good guy. And I don't harbor any ill will towards him. I don't think that the way the national media was reporting on that kerfluffle between him and James, while I think there was some truth to it, I don't think it was nearly as bad as the national media was trying to paint it out or paint the picture of, because let's face it, the national media likes to grab onto any story that they can and light a fire where they think there might be something going on. And whatever will generate clicks, whatever will generate views, they run with it. And they ran with that Chris Paul, James Harden feud for quite a while this summer until the trade happened. And then the trade happened and it was, oh yeah, everything was, you know, so bad with James and Chris, it wasn't salvageable, they had to trade him out. No, Daryl Morey was very much ready to keep Chris Paul and go into the season with Chris Paul and James Harden. That was never a question until Paul George was traded to the Clippers. Once Paul George was traded and Russell Westbrook became available, that completely changed things. So again, I don't harbor any ill will towards Chris Paul. He had a great couple of years here in Houston. And again, my only regret is that he wasn't able to win a chip with the Rockets. And now he may very well have to ride out his career in a rebuilding Oklahoma City environment. But they're coming to town. It'll be a fun game, that's for sure. I'm really hoping Chris Paul plays because it'll be great to see him go at his old team. It'll be great to see Westbrook go at his old team. I would love to see Westbrook posterize Steven Adams. I don't think that's going to happen, but God, that would be awesome. Anyways, for this Monday, October 28th, this is where we will break things. As always, thank you for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, which we are doing daily shows now. Season is in full swing, so we are back to doing daily shows. So that means every single day, Monday through Friday, we're getting a podcast out there. But if you want more content before the next show, which will probably be a recap of tonight's game, social media is where everything's happening. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin. Our special correspondent, Mr. Ben DuBose, is on there, at Ben DuBose. And of course, the show is on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website, lockedonrockets.com, and our email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways that you can consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, you can make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries, Really, it's just a way, these are all ways and avenues for you to let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve the experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts at, if you could take the time to subscribe and rate and give us a 5-star review, that would be incredible, because that's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they are published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Monday, October 28th, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.